now. Just keep flowing. Yeah, yeah, this is cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm super interested in, because, I mean, obviously the various different ways that people engage in sex work, like online sex work versus IRL sex work, not like it's a, you know, versus so much as a different departmental distributions, but the idea of everything, so many things moving to online, is the organization having conversations like around how a lot of people are trying to move their, like, maybe a transition from IRL to more digital sex work?
A lot of people are trying to transition to online, but it's not working for them. Because it's just, like, really it's a different thing. Right, like, it's just a different skill set, and they don't have the skill set. And, like, this is, a pandemic is not the appropriate time to try to develop a new skill set. you know what I mean? Because, like, you need to be able to kind of hit the ground running. Yeah, so it's really hard for a lot of folks right now, because a lot of folks are like, okay, well, I already know how to, you know, do sex work, so it's fine. I can just, like, you know, go to whatever different thing. And it's like, no, you really just can't switch like that. You have to know how to do it. So, yeah. And then, of course, like, there's still, like, all the SESTA FOSTA shit. And now they're trying to pass, like, EARN IT, which is basically going to expand FOSTA. So, like, that's also really fucking stressful with the whole thing. So, it's a mess.
And then exposure, like literal exposure. I mean, if you're still trying to work.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, folks have been trying to do outreach and just be like, hey, here's some cash. Go get a motel room. Like, go inside as much as you can. But, like, funds are really limited. So much, like, 501c3 money is going to COVID right now. Like, we lost so many donors for, like, the next fiscal year. And it's just like.
I'm sure.
That's great. So, yeah.
And there's like a sadness to like looking for a place to move to and knowing that there's probably a convenience, because here comes an eviction crisis.
Right.
We've seen that on the horizon pretty much all this year. We're like, that is coming, and that's going to be ugly.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, it's going to be a pretty slick slide the rest of this year, I think, for a bunch of things. I saw a graph where somebody was like, oh, the economy's really bounced back. Like, we had that big tank where there was a ton of people who were unemployed, and now it's suddenly bounced back. And I didn't actually have the time to, like, look through the article attached to the graph. But I was like, how are we bouncing back again? Like, is it that temporary spike because we reopened everything? And then we're just going to, you know, re-slump again in a month or two when people realize that, you know, the numbers are not,
behaving. I've seen about stuff increasing is the stock market. Like, it's not, you know, it's like Jeff Bezos is fine. Everybody else is not. So, yeah, that's what I keep seeing, like, about these numbers, is that it's like, because that's the thing, is a bunch of these businesses are getting those loans. Yeah. To pay employees, but they're still firing the employees, or they're still keeping them on furlough. So,
Jay-Z.
That's the whole thing. It's like, oh, well, it's putting confidence in the market because they have this money, so it's going to, you know, mitigate unemployment and, you know, paused wages, but it's not, because they don't actually have to do it. Again, it's like the recommendations. The government is recommending that you use it to pay furloughed employees, but you don't have to. And so businesses just aren't. So there's all this, like, confidence in the market that is like, it's not, okay.
Do you know what's hilarious about that? Do you know what con man is short for? Confidence man.
I love it.
Because for you to con somebody, they gotta have confidence in you.
Seems accurate. Jesus, everything is terrible.
And folks may recognize this, and it may be a little awkward for folks that regularly tune into the program. This is the trigger warning voice.
Yes.
This is that person that you've been
hearing.
Hello,
everybody.
6 years.
Oh, yeah. So many warnings, so many triggers.
That was old school. I remember, like talking about what to add to it, sending messages back and forth on an iPod Touch over Wi-Fi.
It's true. It's true. At one point, we were like, maybe we might have to actually send letters because it, we're so old and the internet is so confused about its identity. But we don't want to leave anybody out. Like, literally, that list got so long. It took me, like, 9 minutes just to read it the first time. And we were like, maybe we should consolidate.
Yeah, and I remember when somebody wrote about the podcast, because it was the whole thing with Benjamin Dixon and those folks.
Oh, yeah.
And they went over the episode to try to figure out this podcast beef, I guess. And they said it starts with an exhaustive trigger warning.
It does.
I was like, come on, man.
It does, though.
I appreciate they said exhaustive and not exhausting. It was a small kindness.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, where things went. Like, you were a big part of a big turning point in the program. Mm-hmm. Like, right before you showed up, one of the last episodes I had done was, 10 reforms from some whistleblowers for the NSA. Like, I was one of those guys, just yelling about the underground government that you don't know about, man.
To a certain extent, you still are that guy.
I was actually, so I was I did a little media interview earlier today with some people who are trying to put together a documentary on the various ways that neurotechnology impacts relationships and stuff like that. And one of the things we were talking about was how fascinating it is that the human brain creates very meaningful and serious relationships. We construct these relationships with people, you know, on screens or you know, even just through auditory inputs that people we've never met, we've never seen in real life, we've never actually hung out with IRL. And these can be some of the most, like, sort of long-term, profound relationships that we have, and that your brain actually constructs entire galaxies out of this little screen interface that we use to exchange data.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That was dope. That's one of the illest things I've heard on this program. I just say I like my echo chamber. My echo chamber's really neat. That's what I call it.
Right. I call mine being in a hamster wheel with headphones on.
Yes.
Ah.
I mean, it's good to have headphones on if you're on a hamster wheel.
It's brutal because it's when you don't have appropriate social feedback loops, right? You work so much harder for so little progress.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are so much more efficient as essentially just producers of experience. We're so much more efficient when we have all the a sequence of feedback loops that let us micromanage in real time, like, how effective we're being. So, you know, when we get in that echo chamber, which I'm all about echo chambers because I find myself endlessly entertaining. But, you know, you get in certain echo chambers and you end up kind of, this is where I think contextualizing sometimes mental health difficulties, where people get super anxious or obsessive and they end up sort of internally looping because they're too ashamed to actually tell anybody mm-hmm. about the stuff they're kind of stressing about. And so they end up in that hamster wheel. And hamster wheels aren't too bad, because we all need to sometimes just, you know, get the energy out. It's when you put the headphones on top of it so you don't have any feedback from your environment to modulate your level of effort. Uh-huh. I feel like this analogy has gone completely left. Here's what I'm trying to say before it gets too complicated, is that it's wild how important and meaningful even, like, small interactions, whether they're digital or, you know, in physical proximity. It's wild how just small interactions change things and mm-hmm. put people on very different paths. Like, we all met, I'm trying to remember, and I think I remember. Me and William ended up interacting initially over a chat thread on a comment that Saul Williams made. Saul Williams says something, and somebody got mad about something because he was like, maybe, I try to remember what it was, but it was something where people...
Annie DeFranco.
Yeah, Annie DeFranco and the Plantation Planet people. I remember that. Okay, So yeah, so I made some comments, and then a couple, and I ended up in a group. We ended up in a group together, didn't we?
Yeah, and I
deconstructing whiteness.
Yeah, that's what it was.
One of the first pictures I posted on my account, I think it's still there. Like, you have to go back to the beginning of when I started the account, mm-hmm. was a screenshot of Penny's comment.
Okay.
That's right.
I was like, this is wine cellar shit.
And I was so hot that day, too. I remember because, you remember, like, back in your baby woke days when just everything infuriated you all of the time? Like,
yes.
Like now it's a very much sort of a low-grade background rage that just exists. You know, sort of in the bloodstream. But at the time, I was just, like, full bore, unable to regulate how mad I was about everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I had comments to spare.
At that time, I got obsessed with my social justice research.
Right?
And I had actually listened to, if I remember the number right, it was like 353 episodes of the Men's Rights Activist podcast so I could critique them and point out where they're wrong.
Oh my God.
But it's like, did one men's rights activist change their mind because of me?
Listen, now that we are older and wiser, the amount of time that we have put into things and then did not walk away with a piece of paper that said we had a degree of advancement is kind of wild to me.
Yeah, no, yeah, there's nothing. I literally just have show notes thumbtack to the wall, literally right now. Like, oh yeah, Mumia Abu-Jamal, that's right. Okay, Jim Hightower, make sure I get to that. Australia fires, are those happening again? Make sure I look for that. Trans youth shelter, okay, I gotta remember to look those up. Yeah, I literally just have show notes. Those are my 3 degrees. This is the shit I cover.
Right? You're like, oh, pieces of paper, I have plenty of those, just none of them make me any extra money.
Seriously.
None of them raise my pay grade.
Yeah, and we were thinking about being like other podcasters, and like I really actually was going through with it, with making like Patreon only content and making right. A tiered system. And somebody doubled their Patreon amount, mm-hmm. and then left a long note saying that the new people that just came from Twitter that wanted to be the other way need to know that this is a socialist program.
Well.
Yeah, not the exact wording. I don't have it in front of me, but it's on there. It's dope. I should screenshot it and post it. Make that my background image.
Wasn't that always the thing you used to say when you used to close out the show? Be like, if you want to pay the tax so everybody can use the road.
Yeah. We right? all drive on the wine cellar road.
We all do.
Who doesn't want to drive on a road of wine? It's, come on.
I mean.
Everyone else is out there using social media. We're over here with our socialism media.
Oh, nice. I like it. I like it.
See, this is what happens. Yeah, Penny's. Yeah, you're a fast thinker. That's why I was always like, Phoenix, call Penny, talk to Penny. Like, Penny should be your friend. You should be talking to her all the time, because Phoenix's mind moves like that, swift. Like, oh mm-hmm. yeah, like mm-hmm. oh, here's the historical context behind that, and that's when Britain passed this law, and it had this particular negative effect, and these are the percentages. You want to see my source?
And this is why biscuits mean different things in different locations of the world.
Don't you do that.
You can get all the way to New York where it is now a gun.
Oh, but listen. Do British allies want biscuits?
Are they talking about shoes in California or a little snack?
This is what I'm saying. Like, so we give white allies cookies. Do we give, like, white Anglo allies biscuits? How does this work? I need to know.
Biscuits.
We could do biscuits.
They always we like could, a hot like, cuppa.
They we could make like our own like biscuit brand and just be like, here, it's a black owned business. Buy some fucking biscuits.
Right? Right?
Wait.
Or even better, we'll give you a biscuit tag to put on your socialism media saying you're approved by the Wine Cellar Podcast crew. With Wine Cellar Podcast, the Black Podcast approval stamp.
And yes. And I like this already because we're talking about biscuits. So the Hoteps are going to come and be like, you want them plantation butter biscuits from the Democrat plantation, brother.
Ugh. I realize we're leaving ourselves open to so many things. Like the first person who says, this show really butters my biscuits. And then I have to go and take a shower. Yeah. I realize the door is wide right now.
Yep. Someone go ahead and leave that on an iTunes review.
Could just be like, buy black. Biscuits, like in parentheses.
Yeah, it could be B.O.B. It's no longer Bombs Over Baghdad. It's buy
Bring
our biscuits.
Bring your own.
Bring your own biscuits.
Oh.
Yeah, bring your own biscuits and always, and everyone put 10% of your biscuits on the table just in case a stranger comes through. We might have a new comrade. We want to have some biscuits for him.
And we're going to price our biscuits differently based on your background demographic.
Yes. Definitely. I love
we're
gonna it.
We're going to need your census information.
Now, this 2020, what stands out for you?
For me? Oh. This is the year I think that I decided that avocados were not uninterrogatable. And what I mean by this, I don't know if you interrogate your avocados, but what I mean by this is over the last handful of years as I've been trying to sort out, so I'm gonna turn 40 this year, which makes me a decade baby, which makes me one of the people, so if you were born in 1980, then you are going to be 40 in 2020, and that means for the rest of your life, you can just add the numbers together, and that's going to be how old you'll turn that year. So, first of all, I don't have to keep track of how old I am anymore. I just have to do some basic math. Secondarily, as we age, one of the things I think most of us do is really notice that we're no longer made out of one-third stem cells, and we don't bounce like we did when we were 12. And, you know, the bodies are changing and breaking down and things. We're kind of, you know, worried about health and nutrition and stuff like that and long-term viability and mobility. And so one of the things that I have done over the last handful of years is try to sort out the politics of nutrition, right? Because our bodies are all changing. We're all kind of working on that. But there's so many different ways that we judge each other and ourselves about the types of food we put in our bodies. And even when it's not necessarily about weight and appearance, we tend to moralize and value rank different types of foods, right? And even though we have, I think, very good conversations out in the zeitgeist around how we, you know, like what it means to attribute emotional significance to types of foods and how certain things can be nostalgic and how it's fine to eat junk sometimes in moderation and who cares what you eat at all, do what you want, we're all going to die anyways. I mean, I feel like there's like a lot of good conversations ongoing, but I feel like I had not properly internalized to myself the ways that that foods that are healthy for some bodies are not healthy for all bodies. Right? And so, I mean, I think most of the time, most people would say, oh yeah, no, avocado is a healthy thing for you, mm-hmm. right? Good, healthy fats. But some people are actually allergic to avocados, which I feel is a cheat caveat. But mm-hmm. in actuality, the degree to which we, you know, balance out sugars and fats and fibers and all that sort of thing. So my family has a history of gallbladder, sensitive gallbladder mm-hmm. issues, right? And so even though I can eat a lot of good healthy fats, my body doesn't love all the things that are necessarily deemed healthy. So I still actually have to be aware of my own how I show up individually. And that actually made me start, you know, with food. Like not all food that's good is good for everyone. And that made me think a lot about how we consume media and literature and research in the conversations we have around even just social justice and how we often think, oh, I had this healing experience or I had that type of trauma and this particular intervention helped me, or this is the type of language we need to be using around these sorts of issues, and you know, domestic violence has to be handled in this particular way. And so I'm thinking about just in terms, even as we discuss things like, you know, abolition, like, and people are really huffing back and forth about what that even means and how much we need it, right? I'm thinking in terms of how important it is for us to acknowledge that what, you know, recovery and healing and justice and reparations, that they look really different for individual people. And I think there's been, a lot of, I mean, there's always going to be judgment between us, right? Like, we're always going to kind of judge each other for what we think is reasonable or unreasonable ways of accepting or not accepting, you know, overtures from the people around us, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think I had really fully translated how much on an individual level it's important to realize that what reparations and justice and healing mean for me don't mean it for other people. And I feel like a healthy kink community is one half step, you know, like, don't kink shame me, bro. Like, I feel like a healthy kink community is almost like a half a step, you know, beyond the rest of us, because they've already had to negotiate with the idea that what works for me doesn't work for you.
Yeah, but don't yuck my yum.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I think I hadn't really internalized for myself that idea around, like, healing and maybe justice and reparation. So I think that's the thing I'm chewing on in 2020.
Yep. Sorry, no, that was really good, but the child is playing video games in the other room, and as soon as you got done with that whole, like, in-depth analysis, and you're like, if that's what 2020 is, all I hear from the other room is, oh, Jesus Christ!
Exactly, and then there's that.
I got shot again. Don't shoot me, bro! Okay.
And I'll bet you this microphone picked that up.
Oh, no. No, I think that's actually a really great topic, and I think that's really important, because I think a lot of people have their idea of what abolition looks like or what reformative or transformative justice looks like, and, like, once they figure out what works for them, they don't consider that that might not work for everybody else, or that other people's healing processes might be different, and so it does create, like, you know, issues around the thing. Like, I was actually having a conversation with someone the other day where they were like, I just can't support prison abolition because, you know, as always with, like, prison abolition, like, well, what do you do with, like, the bad people? And, you know, it's, like, trying to explain to people that just because someone can't necessarily be fully integrated in society because they're a danger doesn't mean we lock them in a cage. Like, there's a lot of, you know, steps between those two things. And so, like, a lot of people, you know, haven't necessarily considered that, but it was, like, really a conversation, because what they were really saying was, I'm scared for my safety because I've been the victim of a crime, I've been in abusive situations, so when I hear prison abolition, what I'm hearing is, like, you don't want me to be safe, and you're just gonna let abusers out. And it's like, whoa, that's totally not what I'm saying, but, you know, the way the question was initially framed, that's not, like, I did not know that's what you were asking me. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
I was like, yeah, okay, so let's talk about what everybody needs and, you know, go from there. But yeah, I think that's a super important point, because you don't, yeah, it's going to be unique for everyone. But I think that there's enough common ground if people are clear about what they want. I think that's a big part of that problem, too, is people aren't necessarily clear about what they want or can't give a detailed explanation of what they want. But I think if more people could do that, we would find a lot more common ground, I think.
What I mean,
yeah,
about interrogating the avocado. People are not properly interrogating their avocados. So they're like, oh, you know, well, I don't want all the bad people to be let out. And if you take a step back, okay, first of all, did our current system protect you from the bad people to begin with?
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. Did it work initially, and now you're worried about taking apart a thing that works for you and, you know, replacing it with something worse that won't work? No. Right. Like, it's not like it protected you in the first place. It's not like it's solving the problem. And the fact that this is just what we have and something else would be worse is not a problem-solving position.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Because I always find, like, whenever you say, like, prison abolition, people are like, what about serial killers? And it's like, can you even name 10 serial killers who are alive in prison right now?
And also, the majority of them are currently not in prison, and all the money we're spending on prisons isn't going towards actually training people who would be able to find those serial killers, because I need to tell you, the people that are actually on SVU or whatever the heck people watch these days, the people who are like, oh, Mindhunters. Listen, Mindhunters, we did not actually change that much from when we had 2.5 people in a dank-ass basement, you know, putting together little pieces of information and trying to come up with a way to figure out what a serial killer is. It's not like we've changed that much. The advancements have happened in media more than they've happened in actual departments that catch people.
Right.
So you still have underfunded, undertrained, you know, less competent, quote-unquote, overpaid officials who still aren't catching serial killers. Not like it works.
And, I have an article, actually. Well, actually, if you want to find it, it's on Reading in the Shade. It was the last thing I posted about, like, people who produce and, like, write for the propaganda shows where they basically admit they know that's what they're doing, is, like, making propaganda. But, I think it's even interesting when you talk about stuff like, oh, you know, like, serial killers, and people get really scared. I mean, obviously. But it's, like, people don't realize, again, because of, like, the, you know, the propaganda shows and, like, these public perceptions, there are so many serial killers who aren't even on the radar, because everyone's like, oh, serial killers are, like, 40-year-old white men. And it's like, sometimes, but not all serial killers are white men, you know? And so, like, but that is so much in the narrative. And because, you know, non-white victims are not taken seriously, like, you know, like, who was his name? Was it Samuel Little? That was the Grim Sleeper guy. He was, like, the most prolific serial killer in American history because he was killing homeless black women, and, like, nobody cared to, you know, put the pieces together because they're like, oh, you know. And so, like, those sort of cases are happening all the time. Like, there's a serial killer still loose in Chicago who's attacking sex workers, but, you know, nobody's taking it seriously. And so it's just, like, you know, you have this people have this obsession with, like, you know, Law and Order, not the show, but, like, the concept, and that, you know, we have to rely on police and, like, FBI behavioral analysis and, you know, whatever, but it's like, those aren't always accurate, and those really aren't keeping people as safe as you think they are. You know, because, I mean, what, like, there's, like, 64,000 missing black women and girls right now, just missing, and it's like, maybe we should do something about that, or not, I don't know. But, you know, you can't defund police, though, because that's going to hurt people, I guess.
Because, you know, obviously police aren't serial killers. Obviously politicians aren't serial killers. Obviously medical providers couldn't be serial killers. Like, how are you going to define serial killer? Like, how many people's deaths do you have to be directly or indirectly responsible for before you're a serial killer? Like, nobody says you have to strangle and chop them up. How many, like, child protective service workers are responsible for the deaths of children that they place in abusive homes? Because they don't give a shit.
Right.
I mean, when do you become a serial killer?
Yeah. No, I think that's actually a very valid question. And, you know, again, like, serial killer, it has a very specific, like, stigma around it, right? So it's, like, someone who's, you know, committing oftentimes, like, sex crimes and these, like, highly ritualized murders and things like that. But, you know, but that is a fair question. Is, like, if you're a prison guard and you know that, you know, inmates are fighting and they're having, you know, internal issues and someone's going to get stabbed to death and you just let them fight, like, does that make you a serial killer? Or, like, in Rikers, right, where they were making inmates fight with each other to entertain the guards, like, that gladiator shit.
Yeah.
Like, does that make you a serial killer? Because people die from that shit. Like, you know, knowing that someone is in an abusive situation, especially when it comes to, like, kids, especially with DCFS, they don't remove kids from abusive situations. Like, yeah, I think that's a very valid question. At what point? And then, for fuck's sake, our politicians, right? Like, fucking these drone strikes? When's the last time? Have we ever had a president who's not a war criminal? Like, ever?
Yeah, the abortion laws, of course.
Of course.
And then what? The, was it Blue Alert one that Obama supported?
The Blue Lives Matter law?
Yes. Yeah, that stuff, yeah, they're getting their kill on. Phoenix Cleaver's making a quick run. Where are you running to, madam? Oh, no.
Maybe she's going to get her wine.
That's a fair deal. It is Friday. Said wine.
Oh, no, I don't have any in the house.
Oh, tragedy. Did you get your birthday present?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. Excellent.
I gotta show you what I got, too.
Cool, you'll have to text me a picture.
Yes. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, what were we talking about?
don't know. We could. You're talking about serial killers.
Yeah.
Or it's like the, yeah, like this is way out of anything I know about.
You know, me and Phoenix have a lot of direct first-hand experience with the culture of killing things in a serial manner.
yes, we do.
Contribute our expertise.
Yes.
Don't mind us. We have a lot of avocados to interrogate.
There are a lot of avocados to interrogate.
I don't get all the metaphors. I don't know.
That's what we should do. We should start like an agency and just call it like the Avocado Interrogation Agency.
Listen, the automatic assumption that the assertion that has been made to you does not require further interrogation is essentially what my life is based on, right? Yeah. Just deconstructing this idea that just because you tell me a thing or it's been this way or you haven't come up with a better idea yet means that the current situation is does not require critique and investigation.
Right. Oh, I agree.
The what?
With the avocado interrogation agency thing. Because really, the whole concept of it is that we don't know things, and people get comfortable assuming they do know there's only one way to think about things, and they get really rigid, and it's like, how about a little intellectual curiosity and wanting to know more, doing more research, and, you know, going from there and saying, maybe my theory is wrong, maybe I can grow, maybe I have more to learn, instead of just saying, this is what I was taught, this is what I think, I'm not changing. Like, there's no point in being rigid like that. Like, fucking interrogate yourself too. Shit.
Shut up and eat your guacamole, kid. Nobody asked you.
I mean, seriously though, like that's so many people are like that when it comes to things. Like, look at how many people are like, we have to have capitalism because there's nothing better. And it's like, we could try something else. Like, because this is kind of shitty. Like, what if we just try? Or, like, you know, common knowledge. We can't defund police. They keep us safe. It's like, do they,
though? But do they, though?
Like, you know?
Yeah, like, they've been complaining about this mythical knockout game for, like, over a decade.
Yes.
Where the fuck are these fucking boys in blue?
They're doing stuff somewhere else at the
taking
time
a nap. We saw that pig that was harassing you a couple days ago. That pig came pulling out of a high school parking lot.
Yes.
But it's summertime, mm-hmm. And we live in colonial times.
Right.
So he was in there taking a nap. There's nothing going on in that campus.
Nope, not he a damn thing.
He was pacing the grounds for Tide Pods. You don't understand the dangers.
We don't know. It could have been really bad. He probably saved some poor child from overdosing.
Tide Pod. I remember when they were saying that these millennial kids are eating Tide Pods, and I'm like 31. What the fuck are you talking about? No, I had Tide Pods, and I was like, I'm not fucking eating. No, I'm doing laundry. I'm an adult. What are you? Because I knew that I was a millennial, and I didn't know that it was propaganda yet.
Right.
I thought that people were just, I was like, they were confused or something. I was like, no, you're wrong, Mr. Journalist Man.
Yes, the millennials are not eating Tide Pods. Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a waste of money. I'm an adult. I got bills and shit. I'm gonna buy soap and eat it. I buy food and eat it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. People still fucking think millennials are kids.
Yeah, when it's like
two generations after us. At this point, okay, Zoomer is just as valid as anything else.
Yeah, like, here, you want to know what millennials look like? Phoenix and I, millennials,
we
compare gray beard hairs with each other.
We do.
We're millennials.
I have more than you.
I have the gray nose hair override.
That's not an override. With all the gray hair I have on my head, that is not an override. You have two gray hairs.
You offset it with purple.
That doesn't make it not gray.
This is a domestic dispute. You're witnessing
that help.
See, and this is millennials arguing. We sound like kids.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, man, this hurts. Shoot, Phoenix, like, use the witch hazel.
Yeah, use the witch hazel.
Is that what the kids are talking about?
Yes.
Are the kids at the sidewalk cafe discussing witch hazel?
Yes.
Tiger Balm.
Whew, yes, I love me some Tiger Balm.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, like, there is that class disconnect. Because also, the people that, you know, put the propaganda out about this is what millennials do, everything they're talking about is something class privileged.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's nothing right. broke-ass millennials are doing.
Right. Which is also weird, because then they're like, why aren't millennials buying houses? Why are millennials killing the diamond industry? But then people are like, why are millennials always at brunch? It's like, because we don't have any diamonds or houses.
We don't have places to eat.
And then also, it was capitalism that showed millennials the Blood Diamonds movie.
Yeah. That's still one of my personal greats on Twitter, was getting a financial firm to delete their tweet. Because it was about, like, take out a loan for your dream marriage. And I was like, hey, millennials, you know what industry we should kill next? And then they deleted the tweet.
All right, like, I love that when we went to Habitat for Humanity, they had shopping carts. Toys R Us shopping carts.
Oh, God, they did.
Thanks, millennials.
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm thinking about the little baby, like, is it Trader Joe's that has the little baby shopping carts for the kids?
I don't know. I don't go to Trader Joe's.
Is it Whole Foods? It's one of the slightly fancier franchises. And one of the slightly fancier franchises, they've got little kitty-sized carts.
Oh, that's cute.
Even though I'm like, this is adorable, and I took like 37 pictures of my nephew pushing it around and trying to knock food into it, even though I was like, this is adorable, I was like, this is conditioning.
It is.
The other half of my brain was like, ugh. How about no? Like, you know, I don't have any ability to tell my nephew no. He's tiny and cute. He wants to push the thing around, like, I'll buy him everything, you know? That's
yep.
like anti-capitalism.
And again, like, folks tuning in, all right, like, this is why I need to be able to go full-time podcasting, because if I have the time, I would go through this whole episode and make a supercut of every time Penny snorts.
Oh, yeah, that is a thing I do.
It's kind of funny, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I feel like, so some years back, I was on some type of, I don't remember if I did an interview or something, and somebody pointed it out, and I got super embarrassed. I was like, "All right, I'm gonna eradicate the snort, right? I'm gonna change how I laugh."
Mm-hmm.
And I tried really hard for, I want to say, like, a solid 17 hours.
Uh huh. You can't fight nature.
I gave up so fast.
You can't fight nature.
I think I got distracted with marshmallows or something. Something happened that became way more interesting. The reward to effort ratio was too low, and
I mean, marshmallows are delicious.
Here we are.
Yeah. Definitely delicious.
I think 2020 for me. I think I'm just I'm not really much different, except that I declared it wine cellar acceleration year. And I wasn't fucking around. Like, because, like, I've been trying to bring in more voices and more people. And, like, I try to target it, you know, bring in certain folks. It was like, nobody was really doing it. And I also noticed, because I follow on my social media and especially read how they interact with people in their comments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks are just all about dating and fucking. And it's like, mm-hmm. Where are the folks that are, you know, about their activism and
right.
about legislation and, you know, about anti-capitalism and anti-policing, but then, like, will interact in their comments section and they'll answer the questions and they'll handle the disagreements well. And I was like, this fucking kid, Chelsea Springler.
Yeah.
This kid's dope. And yeah. they got this Facebook page called Fury, but then also, you know, it's a group of them. It's a small group of folks. Call themselves Fury Feminist Uprising to Resist Inequality and Exploitation. And when the pandemic hit, and, like, I was snagging masks for my job, we did our socialize the masks thing, and we got them, and they were giving masks out to houseless folks and workers that didn't have access to a mask yet. So it's like, mm-hmm. shit, and they get out there in the streets, and I mean, does that count as outreach? Is that outreach?
I think that's outreach.
Yeah.
I think that's a form of outreach, yeah.
They're doing activist outreach, socializing the masks. So, yeah, so we brought in Fury,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's some real dope 2020 shit. And then what if Penny Loco comes back?
Penny Loco can always come back.
Before 6 years.
you can always come back, Penny.
We should just make it a regular thing.
Yeah, I could just contact. Because again, like, all with not having to do the 12-hour shifts and that Wednesday 14-hour shift.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Like, just doing the 8s and the 1 10-hour shift a week. I've got time to podcast. Phoenix has seen me. I'm up at 3:30 a.m. Let's do the morning wine cellar.
Yep.
All right, 6 p.m. Let's do the evening wine cellar. I got time.